And I'd like to turn the meeting over to Chuck Kay.
Thank you, Toby. I'm Chuck Kay. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a part of the Greater Atlanta Intergroup, and I'm happy to be here. I've been in program about 5 years, and I have been abstinent, but my food plan has changed over those 5 years, 4 or 5 years. I'm going to apologize to the translator right now because I'm likely to forget to go slow. And so we're really excited to be in step 10. We've done a lot of work as we've gone through the steps. And as the step 9 promises tell us, certain things will happen. Sometimes they'll happen slowly. Sometimes they'll happen quickly, but they will materialize if we work for them. Step 10 is a part of that work. When we look in the big book, it gives us a paragraph. Half that paragraph is telling us how to do it. And then the other half of that paragraph gives us specific instructions. So I wanted to take some time to break all that apart. And let's look how step 10 is really a culmination of step 4 through 9. And I know a lot of people may have heard that, but let's see what that means and how that works as we work step 10. And so the first part of the paragraph in step 10, it gives us some key words. It says, work this for our lifetime. This is part of the work we'll do for the rest of our lives. And then another part, it says, we need to work this vigorously. And it gives us some descriptive words on how to do what we're doing. And I think they're good reminders. We have to remember that the purpose of all of this work is not to stop eating. The purpose of this work is to find the power greater than ourselves that will restore us to sanity, God. However we say God, and a higher power, him, she, it, whatever it is, the steps provide us a workbook, essentially, to do that. And then the purpose of our lives is to perfect and enlarge that connection with God. That's what we're here for. That's what we're to do. And part of the way we do that is through service and self-sacrifice for others. We sponsor, we attend conventions, we talk to people, we outreach. These are all the things that help us get out of ourselves, help us lower that level of ego that was part of the problem all along. So when we look at step 4, and if you're familiar with step 4, it's broken up into columns, 3 inventories, and each inventory has columns. And I know for myself, I was always spending my life before programming column 1 and 2 of step 4. And I could tell you at any moment of time who they were and what they've done to me. But then there's a transition after that column 2. Then I have to begin looking at how am I affected? And then in column 4, I'm looking at where am I to blame? What is my side of this? And where are my character defects coming to the surface? And primarily selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Those are the 4 main ones that step 10 will ask us based on step 4. And that's a very interesting transition because I never want to look at myself. I want to look at other people. It's so much easier to point my finger at anyone and everyone else and tell the world how they were wrong, that before program, I never developed that skill of saying, hey, wait a minute. When I do that, I'm in essence playing God, and I don't need to do that anymore. I need to look within myself, and I need to pray and ask God's help for those things. And that's a very critical skill that we learn. And really, 4 through 9 is a skill. It's a skill just like riding a bike. It's just like, you know, doing math, anything. The more I work at it, the better I'm going to get. Then we progress into step 5. In step 10, it says, we talk to somebody about these problems. Well, that has 2 purposes. One is it's like an emancipator, equals us. It gets rid of our ego. And not only does it get rid of our ego by us calling someone, the person on the other line gets that same ego-reducing call. And you both are talking, and now instead of living in whatever problem we were dealing with in life, we're now talking about program, and hopefully we're talking about God. And the other person, they may have some insight that I'm not familiar with. I may think my problem is dishonesty. And the other person may decide, no, maybe you want to look at the fear. And I'll think, man, how do they know that? And it's simply because they've been there and they've done that, because they're a compulsive overeater too. And even though this is a diversity convention and we're all different, it's very interesting to me how similar we feel. And I think the biggest feeling that I hear about when I'm talking to anyone is that feeling of not being good enough in your own shoes. I'm always looking at other people, and I'm either looking down on them to make myself feel better, or I'm looking up at them to say I'm not worth anything. And I've done that dishonest behavior so much in my life, I don't even know what's true anymore. And the book will talk about that earlier on in the chapters. And then when we look at steps 6 and 7, these are very, they're all important steps, but these are very important steps too. Being willing to ask God to remove our defects, and then humbly asking God to do so. And that's so critical. When I'm working with anyone or I'm talking to anyone about step 6 and 7, as it relates to step 10, that portion of it, it's important for me to remind myself and other people that when I ask God questions like these, when I'm presenting myself in this way, God will answer these questions for me, because God loves me just as I am. The trick is, I have to go through this life and I have to give other people that same amount of forgiveness. I have to accept other people just as they are. And I can't look up at them anymore. And I can't look down on them anymore. We're all together. And the more I practice this step, the more I remind myself and other people remind me of these things. Then when we get into steps 8 and 9, as it relates to step 10, if I've harmed someone, I've got to make an amends. And again, if we're practicing step 10 and I'm doing it consistently, you better believe that I'm going to think before I speak to certain people or in certain situations or certain topics. Because I have a big ego. I'm a compulsive overeater. And the last thing I want to do is make an amends to somebody I don't want to make amends to. And I can't tell you personally how many times I have saved myself on amends by just keeping my mouth shut. That's probably the mantra of my program. Just keep my mouth shut. And so, of course, 10 and then 11 and 12, we're calling people, we're praying to God. So you can see the culmination of 4 through 9, and really all of the steps are in step 10. Now, a little bit of my history. Before program, I was 40 years old when I came in program. So I have I was 45 years old when I came in program. I've got 5 years of experience. A lot of growth occurred for me, both in terms of my food plan and in terms of just understanding the steps and how they work and how to apply them. And I always said willingness was something that I always had. I always showed up to program. I can't say that I was always honest with my sponsor. I can't say that I always went to meetings every single week, but I never gave up. But one thing I did do is I always said, if I'm going to be willing to do something, then I need to back that willingness up with action. And I think the steps provide us a very rigorous set of rules on how to do that action, how to do something. Willingness alone never helped me. You know, I can't tell you how many times I was willing to do something, never did it, whether it was school or anything else. And program is the same way. Willingness is good, but if I don't match that willingness up with action, then it's really like I'm worrying or I'm just twiddling my thumbs. And so that's why I'm appreciative of the steps, because it gives me, this is what I can do right now. And that gets me out of worrying about tomorrow, what may happen. And it gets me out of regretting the past, all the things that I've done. Those are the things that I spent my life talking about. And so as I progress through the steps, I am retraining myself. I'm allowing God to come in. I am creating opportunities for God to show me things. And everybody's experienced those moments in program where you just can't put your finger on something. You can't explain it. I heard one today in a cemetery that was a beautiful story. It was a wonderful story on an experience that you had that you can't prove faith, but you know it's happened. And God can come in and help us build that relationship with our higher power that we know and we can count on. Many people, and I was one of them, I am not an agnostic. I am a person of faith. But I had the same problem that an agnostic or an atheist does about program. I thought I knew what I needed to know. The first time I heard somebody say, Chuck, your conception of God is going to have to change, it terrified me almost as bad as it did when they said, you need to give up sugar and flour. It was very scary stuff. But that's where I was supposed to be. And the steps provide me a tool, a program to develop that relationship, erase the things that I don't need from God, and then add things that I do need for God, a God that I can believe in, not the one that I was raised with or people told me what was what I was supposed to believe. Let's face it, on this earth, we can't all be right about religion. We're not all right. And so I have to have the standpoint to say it doesn't matter. I'm going to develop the relationship that works for me. And that is another purpose of program. And, you know, one of the last things I want to mention is I don't work this program I don't live my life to work this program. The steps are great. People can work the steps in a variety of things and they can all work. I think each of us have our own special relationship with the higher power of our understanding. But I work these steps so I can live. These steps allow me to look at myself in the mirror, not just in a physical sense, but an emotional and a spiritual sense. I can look at the Chuck in the mirror and I can be happy with that person. I can tell that person, I love you just as you are. You've done things that you're proud of. You've done things that you're not. And you're just like everyone else. And I couldn't say that before. The steps allow me to look at the people around me, give me the courtesy to listen to what they say, not try to think about what I'm going to say so that they'll like me, but listen to their point of view. I can look people in the eye now with program. And then I can also look at the higher power of my understanding, God. And I can look you straight in the eye and I can say, thank you. Thank you for being there. You got all this world and everything else in it. And here you are helping me with how many spoonfuls I put in my mouth. And those are wonderful, wonderful things to experience. And through the working of these steps, we can experience these. And then what do we do with them? Well, we share them as often as we can. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's all the time I'm going to take. I think I'm cutting it a little early. I hope I didn't talk too fast. I'm just very happy to be here. Thanks, everyone, for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Chuck. Thank you. Now I'm going to turn the meeting over to Edna Kay. Edna, are you here? Can you unmute yourself? Do you see her?
Edna. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Edna, how do you want your time? You got 15 minutes. How do you want your time?
I'm not sure I understand that question. I may stop before the 15 minutes is up, but otherwise you can cut me off. How do you do that?
Well, if you don't have any special way you want me to time you, when it gets to be 15 minutes, I just tell you it's 15 minutes.
All right, that'll work. All right, can you hear me well enough?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thanks. My name is Edna, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I attended the Greater Atlanta Intergroup, and I've been in program 45 years, probably 44 and a half years. And my topic today is step 11. And I thank Chuck for leading into it. And I'm going to use part of his information as well because it pertains to my step 11. When I first came into program, and it said salt through prayer, and I apologize for my squeaky voice. It says sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And I thought I knew who God was. I thought I knew who I was supposed to understand, but however, I had as much to unlearn as I did to learn about my definition of God. And I had the God of my childhood, and I had other people's God, but it seemed like that I was so confused about the God of my understanding. So I sought a journey, which I'm still today, to improve my conscious contact and him. So I had to do a little standing of him was. And our convention is about diversity. So I attempted by trying all the different branches of religion and that I could find. I researched on them, I studied them, I went to different buildings to the position of God until I could find my own. And today I can say that I have one that works for me. He's been working for me. I choose to call him God. It's worked for me for the years that I've been in program. And one of the things that I do work on, and it tells me that to improve, and what do I need to do to improve it? And one is to find time to meditate each day, to find time to reach out to other people as well. Sometimes I need to hear what they have to say on what God has done for them in order for me to understand mine a little bit better. I read different, I guess, books, and I study the big book. I study the 12 and step in order to improve on it.
Edna,
yes.
You're having a little trouble with coming through. I think it's just your video. You may want to, I don't know if you can pull over or turn off your video. It may help with the audio.
Okay. I'm sitting still, so I'm not sure that I can do much more. It does seem to be fading in and out. Is that better?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm losing my voice a little bit, and it makes it sound like I'm going away as well. I'm sorry that it's not better than that, but there isn't anything I can do at this moment. One of the things that I work on now is to spend more time with the God of my understanding, and that is to start every morning with a prayer and meditation. And it comes through. It has provided me with everything that I needed as far as serenity. It provides me with peace and comfort as I go throughout my day. One of the things that I learned along the way is that I used to ask for abstinence on a daily basis. And what I found is if I'm working the 11th step, that I need to continue to believe that that I'm relieved of the compulsion to eat. And that it's not something that I have to go back and do every single day. I'm aware that everyone has differences in how they go about working the 11th step. and even believe in their abstinence. And I don't try to change anybody's mind with any of it. I just know that what works for me is that I believe that God has removed my obsession for food. And through the prayer and meditation and the 11th step, I continue to move from that direction, that I don't have to go back and start over again with asking each and every day for it to be removed. And folks, I apologize, but my mouth is just too dry. I cannot finish anymore.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for sharing. And I hope you'll stay until the end.
I will. Thank you. But okay. I can't do any more.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing. And is Jackie HM ready? Jackie, are you there? Can you unmute?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead.
I'm Jackie HM. I've been in program since August of 1999. Currently, I don't count my abstinent days because I did way too much counting before I got to program, and I'll explain that later. Currently, I'm pregnant and battling all day sickness. So hopefully for this segment of time, I will not be sick. So we will see. So I was asked to speak on step 12. And with step 12, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And the spiritual principle is service. So the greatest service that I think I can do today is to share my story. And since the topic of this convention is diversity, my brand of compulsive overeating is something that I don't hear every day. And whenever I would hear someone share about my particular brand of compulsive overeating, I was always encouraged because what I did with food was unique. I don't hear it very much, even now. So I wrote down a story, and I may not be able to finish all of it because it's a little lengthy, but I will try to finish as much as possible. So if the timer can tell me when I have 2 minutes left, then I will skip ahead and get to the end, okay?
I think you might have a little extra time just because the last speaker was short, but would you speak slowly for the interpreter?
Okay, I will try. All right, so the topic or the story is called Compulsive Overeater, very eloquent. So during a time I worked at Schroner, Cohn & Thomas, a time of deep depression, I developed what began as a curious phenomenon but then grew to a voracious appetite over which I had no control. While I was in college, I thought I had discovered the lifelong secrets to being thin and happy: calorie counting and regular exercise. I had gone from 142 pounds to 125 pounds while employing those methods, and I had managed to keep the weight off for the last 2 years while I was in college, and even a couple of years after college. But somehow, little by little, the self-control and self-knowledge I used to lose and keep the weight off were sabotaged at night. One night in the summer of 1997, I went to sleep as usual, but for a reason I still don't understand completely, I woke up in the middle of the night. It wasn't uncommon for me to awake in the middle of the night. Sometimes I read a book until I could fall asleep again, or just laid on my back contemplating my life until the morning. This time, however, was different. That night, I woke up and felt this unsettling in my stomach, an uneasiness that seemed to be telling me to go to the kitchen. Without any further thought, I found myself in the kitchen. Groggily, I fumbled around until I located the light switch. The kitchen linoleum was cold to my feet, but I continued on the floor. I opened the refrigerator, but the uneasiness didn't respond to anything I scoped out in there. I looked atop the refrigerator, but none of the cereals appealed to me that first time. And then I stopped. To the left of me, on the countertop, my uneasiness started to gurgle in my stomach. I suspected that the large, soft chocolate cookies would appease it. So I opened up the plastic container, hoping that no one could hear me, and placed two chocolate chip cookies in my hand. I quickly bit into one of them before my calorie counting computer in my head turned on and asked to put the cookies down. I trudged back up the stairs, laid down with the cookies wrapped in paper towel in my hand. As I laid on my pillows, still in an almost half asleep state, I ate the cookies. As I ate the cookies, a warmth started in my stomach and then spread to my entire body. I felt strangely comforted and lapsed back into sleep. The next morning, I awoke to find a piece of crumpled up paper towel next to my side. Why is this there? I said to myself as I started to sit up. I opened the paper towel and cookie crumbs tumbled out and onto my bed. And then I remembered I had gotten up and eaten two large cookies in the middle of the night. I can't believe I did that, I said, continuing the conversation with myself in my head. I wonder why I did that, I said to myself. I couldn't answer the question out loud or in my head, but I had another solution to the problem. I would compensate for those two cookies I had eaten during the night by eating less calories and fat during the day. Plus, I had planned on going to the gym after work anyway. My calorie counting combined with exercise would take care of the extra unplanned calories I had consumed during the night. Everything is going to be all right, I said. And everything was all right for a while. But about a month later, in the middle of the night, that unsettling uneasiness gripped me again and told me to go back to the kitchen again. This time, I didn't see cookies on the countertop, but the uneasiness told me that the Captain Crunch on the fridge would do just fine. I poured some of the sweet cereal on a piece of paper towel and traveled back up to my bedroom. I ate some of the cereal before I went to sleep. In the morning, I woke to find at least a handful of cereal atop a paper towel next to me. This time, I fully remembered what I had done before, but I still couldn't figure out why it happened. But it didn't matter now, I told myself. I decided to do the same thing before. I would restrict my calories that day and exercise a little harder during my evening workout to make up for what I had consumed at night. About a month later, due to a crying spell at work, I was sent home for the day by my boss. As I walked in the door, I hoped my father wasn't there. I felt like such a child. Here I was, a college graduate, and I had started bawling like a baby at work, but I couldn't control it. I had been down before here and there, sometimes even for days at a time even, but I never felt a depression like this. It was like a rain cloud over my head that went with me wherever I went. I knew why I felt depressed. I didn't get a job in my field after graduation, and I felt like a failure. Still, although the source of my pain was external and out of my control, I started to feel like I needed to compensate for the pain. I needed a way to cope. That day, I decided to damn my calorie counting to hell. I didn't feel that gnawing uneasiness that crept up on me in the wee hours of the night. Instead, I made a conscious decision to gorge myself until the pain went away. I opened the refrigerator to find the quickest way to get me high. On the aisles of the refrigerator door, I spied a jar of peanut butter and a jar of grape jelly serendipitously, it seemed, placed side by side. That'll do it, I said to myself. Ignoring the manners my parents painstakingly taught me as a child, I stuck my finger in the peanut butter and shoved it in my mouth. I used the same finger to dive into the jelly. I left the unopened jars on the counter and looked for a loaf of bread. Luckily, I found an almost untouched loaf of bread in a basket over the microwave. I heaped peanut butter and jelly on two slices of bread and ate the sandwich in a few bites. I did the same thing with two more sandwiches. I was still sniffling a little bit, but I felt a similar warmth to the warmth I had been feeling at night when I ate. My belly full, I lay down on one of the couches. I still had on my work clothes. I drifted into a restless sleep. At 4 PM, I woke up. I can't believe I've been on this couch for nearly 2 hours, I said to myself as I looked on the clock on the wall across from the couch. I jumped up and sat up straight when I remembered what I had done a few hours earlier. I made the choice to assault myself with food. I wondered, had any permanent damage been done? I wondered if I had already put on weight. Since college, I had tediously counted the calories of everything I put in my mouth to make sure I didn't gain the weight back that I had worked so diligently to lose. As further insurance, I weighed myself a lot, sometimes several times a day. The whole process was becoming my secret obsession. I couldn't bear to try to estimate what I had ingested a few hours earlier, so I decided to do the next best thing. I decided to find the nearest scale. When I was thinking rationally, I knew that I couldn't gain all the weight I had gained back in a day, but rational thinking had become overshadowed by an unhealthy desire to stay thin. So weighing myself constantly was one of the symptoms of what was becoming a disease. I got up and went to the bathroom. My eyes were puffy from crying earlier in the day, and I was starting to feel a throbbing in my head that I knew would be a full-blown headache soon. I washed my face, blew my nose, and brushed my teeth. I went over to my bedroom and changed into a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. I pondered where I could find a scale to weigh myself as I sat on my bed. I had started doing what I coined drive-by weigh-ins, in which I would go to a quick weight loss center or some other sort of establishment that promoted weight loss and ask someone working there if I could use the scale there. I had found a quick weight loss center behind the law firm where I worked and used their scale about once a week. I would have gone back more often, but I didn't want them to know I was weird. I went to the dining room where I found some telephone books. I thumbed through one until I was able to find the listings for weight loss centers. Oh, good. There's a Jenny Craig Weight Loss Center by South Lake Mall, I said out loud. I called the center to find out how late they were open in the evening. I pondered mentioning to the woman that answered the telephone that I wanted to use their scale, but I didn't want to reveal in any way that I was obsessed with weight. When I was on a diet a few years earlier in college to lose weight, I was part of a group that was trying to lose weight. Everyone that was close to me, including all of my friends, knew that I was on a diet, but no one knew, or so I thought, that even after I lost all the weight, I continued to think about my weight all of the time, and I had started to feel isolated. As I drove the 15 minutes to get to the center, I looked at my surroundings, the other cars, the trees, etc. It felt good to get out after I had been in the house for most of the day. As I got closer to the center, though, my chest started to tighten in anxiety. What if I gain weight? I said. How would I handle that? I continued. I pulled into the parking lot and parked my car in one of the spaces in front of the center. As I got near the door, I didn't see anyone in the office. This place better be open, I said, since I drove all of this way. I pulled the door handle and luckily the door swung open. A bell on the door jingled, signaling my entrance. Can I help you? This voice said from one of the rooms in the back of the office. Hey, I said, replying to the woman. I didn't want to say out loud what I wanted. I heard a shuffling sound, and then a middle-aged white woman wearing all black appeared from one of the rooms. Did I catch you in the middle of something? I said. Translation, is there anyone else here with you? She must have understood what I meant. Oh, no, I'm here by myself. I'm trying to clean up before I shut down the office for the day. Did you need to buy some food? We've got some new brownies a la modes in today. Oh, no, I said. I'm not a member here, but I did want to use your scale if that's okay. Oh, the woman said, looking me up and down. That's fine. It's in that back room back there and to your left. I had gotten a call a little while ago about how late the office was going to be open, so I thought that person wanted to come in and buy food. Oh, well, I didn't address what she had said. I just had a big meal, and I'm a little paranoid about my weight. I said, I understand where you're coming from, sister, she said. You're preaching to the choir. I saw the scale in the corner of the room, but before I stepped on the scale, I checked myself out in the full-length mirror next to it. I let my stomach expand to its full girth. Okay, it's not cute to have a big butt and a big stomach, I said to myself. One of these has got to go. I managed to tear myself away from the mirror when I thought of the woman in the office with me. I removed my shoes and got on the scale, 121 pounds. When I graduated from college a year before, I weighed 118 pounds. I knew that 121 pounds wasn't fat by any means, but I wondered if it was a sign, if that was the beginning of the end of the control I had gained over my weight. My night eating was becoming more frequent and more puzzling, and if I continued to choose to eat like I had that day, I knew that weight gain was inevitable. I thanked the woman for letting me use the scale, and I drove back home. Before I gorged myself on those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I was just eating at night about one night a month. After that, I started eating about two or three nights out of the month. I was terrified. For a while, I tried to combat the issue by just restricting my calories even more during the day and stepping up my exercise program. But by Christmas, I realized that this habit had the best of me. I started doing web searches about night eating or eating sweets in the middle of the night. I discovered it was a syndrome and was found in people who were experiencing a lot of stress. Is it 2 minutes? I can't hear you.
It's 5 minutes.
Okay. I discovered that it was a syndrome and was found in people who are experiencing a lot of stress in their lives. Apparently, people chose sugary and starchy foods to eat because it releases serotonin in the brain, which leads to sleep. It is a means of self-medication. What I read made sense to me as I was suffering from depression and in need of pleasure in my life. I decided I would fight this syndrome. I decided to tape the boxes of cereal and cookies closed and put signs on them in black marker on them so it would jar me when I look at the boxes in the middle of the night. My sign said, don't eat, you'll be sorry in the morning. In addition, I was starting to feel pressure from my family as I was eating a lot of the family treats and cereal in one sitting and not leaving enough for them. I hoped my internal motivation plus the pressure from my family would be enough to get me on track. After all, I was the same girl that lost and had kept 20 pounds off by learning about food and counting calories, sticking to a reasonable and healthy diet, and incorporating nearly daily exercise in her life. I had tremendous willpower. I would take the boxes every night. Some nights it seemed to work, but my brothers made fun of what I was doing and wrote messages on my signs like, you know you're going to eat it, and they were right. After a while, I just tore the notes off and got into the boxes regardless of any resolve I had before I went to bed. And so that habit continued to get worse and worse and worse until I did hit my bottom. And I'll skip over all of that and get to the end here. And my bottom was when my grandmother was still alive. My parents are from Jamaica. And my mother had gotten a rum cake made to give to my grandmother in Jamaica because she's enjoys it. And she had the box taped shut that night before flying off to Jamaica the next day. And I got into it and my mom discovered that I had gotten into it. And so I said, the next morning, feelings of guilt and worthlessness nearly drowned me. I prayed my mother would leave on her trip before noticing that I had cut into the cake. But she didn't. A few minutes later, she screamed, Jackie, how could you be so selfish? I ran downstairs to where she was in the kitchen. Sorry, I couldn't even finish my apology. I don't want to hear anything from you, she said. I had this cake made from your grandmother. Why would you do that? I started to cry. I couldn't help myself, I said, stammering through the tears and snot that ran down my face. And I knew then for real what I said, it was true. That everything I knew about dieting and exercise, about calorie counting and delayed gratification meant nothing. Not too much after that time, I saw a calendar listing in a local newspaper for a support group for people who suffer from compulsive eating. It was to be held at a local hospital that Saturday. After my experience with the visualization class, I barely had any hope left. But once I walked in the door, sat down, and listened to everyone talk about how they too had no control over what went in their mouths, I knew I was where I needed to be. While I listened to others talk, I heard from God. God told me to throw away my calorie counting books. I had used those books since I lost 20 pounds in college. I wondered how I was going to be able to counteract what I binged on the night before if I didn't watch what I ate and counted calories. I didn't know the answer, but I was willing to do anything, even obey a voice in my head that I wasn't entirely sure was God. Although I knew God before I found the support group, somehow God chose to speak to me regarding my compulsive eating in that setting. And over time, I heard more and more. God finally released me from the clutches of the monster. Today, I can sleep without getting up and eating. Today, I don't think my self-worth is in direct proportion to the size of my body. Today, I'm not scared of food. So that is how I felt when I first got to program. And by working the 12 steps, that is what happened to me. And so just as my act of service today, I wanted to share. Thank you. So as my act of service, I wanted to share that story. And FYI, I believe I'm on step one again, because presently, I can only eat what I don't throw up, which is not very much at this point. And so we'll see what my higher power has in store for me now. So thanks. That's all I have to share.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that story, Jackie H.M. And thank you, Edna K. and Chuck K., for sharing so much of yourselves and steps. We will now have open sharing. And Jackie, are you open to questions? Yes. All right. If you would like to share, please use the raise your hand function by clicking the reactions button at the bottom of the screen and choosing raise hand. If you're on your phone, find it under more, then reactions. If you can't figure out how to raise your hand, type your name in the chat and say you want to share, or say your name in between shares if you're on your phone. Please recognize the timer when you hear it and quickly wrap up your share. The floor is now open. And Sue Kay, our participant helper, will recognize you.
Diane, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Diane, and I'm a recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater and an addict recovered by God's grace. Hey, I just wanted to say, I wanted to just thank each and for everyone for your service. I'm from Metro Atlanta, Georgia, and I've been in program for about 41 years. And I'm a chronic relapser, but today I'm grateful for these steps, 10, 11, and 12. It's as if I've been in program for years, but it's almost as if I didn't come to the realization of how the program worked. It took me, what, maybe over 39 years to finally get it. And my recovery date, dates from January 2020, just during the pandemic. It's as if I've been given a wonderful gift throughout this pandemic. I've lost the weight the doctor had been trying to get me to lose. And without even trying, I focused on the steps. I focused on following directions and working this program like my hair was on fire. And I resigned from the committee of resistance. I just, accepted, followed the directions. So each and every one of you that shared, there was so much that I was able to relate to. Oh my God, I mean, but for me, my awakening came once I realized the promises of step 10. So I'm grateful for that. And then I realized 10, 11, and 12, you know, if you work those, you're working all the steps. You got to work the steps. There was no easy way. So thank you guys for your share and the people and all in the committee, that's the host and everyone that's working today. We thank you guys for your service. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Diane. Robin's up next, followed by Benita.
Hi, everybody. My name is Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm here in Orlando, Florida. I've been in the program for almost going on 2 years, and I have going on 90 days of abstinence. I want to say thank you for everybody that have shared their stories today. It was suggested for me to start attending a little bit more meetings, and I was pointed into you guys' directions, and it's been blowing for me since I've been listening to everybody here. Step 10 has really hit home for me. I live that by that every single day now. I'm taking inventory of myself and my actions, asking for my higher power for guidance. And I used to be very cocky. And if somebody would tell me, hey, Robin, you need to pause, I don't need to do that. I am so grateful now, especially with everything that I've been going through. My higher power at his time is showing me a new way of life. And I'm realizing what I had or what I didn't have is not important now. It's where I'm going now, living day by day. And I'm just very grateful for the OA family. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Benita, you're up next.
I'm Benita. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I've been a member of Overeaters Anonymous for 35 years. I don't know how much weight I've lost. I quit weighing before I came. But anyway, I've been the same size for a long time. I'm in a normal body size. And that's what abstinence is for me. I've been working towards and maintaining a healthy body weight for a long time. But anyway, thank you all for sharing. And, the steps are very important to me. And I do a 10-step throughout the day. I do a written 10-step at night, because it's clear, I live by myself and it's a pandemic. I don't go anywhere. So really, my 10 steps are not exciting at all. But, rarely do I owe anybody an amends. But my brain can get wound up. And when it gets wound up, I need to be able to get that crap out of my brain. And so it's a wonderful way to do that, to write down all the stuff that my brain tells me. Some of it really doesn't make sense. And I'm fortunate that I have a sponsor that I've had for over 20 years. And anyway, she gets to hear about all the crazies that go on in my brain. So I'm grateful for the 10 step. Because it also lets me know that I'm human and I'm gonna make mistakes. And so I can go back. It tells me what to do when I make a mistake. And then step 11, I can't even get out of my bed without doing step 11. I have to pray and meditate and connect with my higher power on a daily basis every day in order for me to remember who's in charge. Because if I'm in charge, my day's gonna be screwy. And I have gotten to the point, I don't like the way that my days go if I'm in charge. And then when I look at step 12, I've had a lot of spiritual awakenings. Some of them have been so profound, they've almost scared me. They've been so intense. And then it tells me I'm supposed to go out and work with others. And I get to do that by being a sponsor. I get to do that by doing service at things like this. In all kinds of different ways I get to give back. And so I'm very grateful for this program, because before program, I didn't do none of that. Didn't want to do it. Wouldn't have known how to do it, even if you tried to tell me. So I'm just grateful to be here and glad you all are all here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Benita. Toby.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone who's been sharing and to our speakers. I have recently started using a 10th step journal. And I was talking to a few people. Someone told me that they write down what the fear or resentment is, and then a prayer, and then what the way the situation might have played out if they did not have that defective character. And I thought that was really interesting. So I'm trying to do a little bit of that now, but I'm wondering if I could ask our three speakers what their day is like in terms of practicing the 12 steps.
Thanks, Toby. Carla, you're up next.
Oh, I wanted to ask the speaker.
I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm Jackie, compulsive overeater. Thank you for asking that question. And you said all the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps?
Just what your day is like in practicing the steps, prayers, meditating, journaling, okay. Calling.
Okay. Well, my day starts off, I have a time, usually about an hour, that I sit and I journal for 20 minutes. Then I look at some type of literature for 20 minutes, and then I pray for 20 minutes. And so that's what I've been doing every day now for, I guess, over 20 years at this point. My nighttime routine is not as structured, so I still need to work on that. But when I first got to program and when I was released of my night eating, I did read some literature before I went to bed, so it really helped me. But I've kind of slacked up on reading literature before I go to bed at night. As far as a 10th step, I don't do it formally. It's more like when something pops up and I know that I need to correct some kind of behavior. And like someone shared, I don't really get out very much right now. So I don't have as much, as many opportunities to interact with people and, you know, be offensive. I will say when the pandemic really got underway, you know, after it had been going for about 6 months, I did have this period where I found myself kind of like picking fights with people at the grocery store. And I think that was because I was feeling like pent up energy or something. So I started sharing more about that at meetings and with my sponsor and with my husband. And thankfully I was released of that, like just picking, you know, picking little fights with people over stupid things. Yes, I guess that's, yeah, my primary way of doing that is my hour-long time with my higher power each morning. And I have made phone calls on a daily basis. Most recently, I haven't been as good at that, but that's something else that I also do to check in and keep my spiritual program intact. So thanks.
I'm Chuck. I'm a compulsive overeater. I find that I work program best when I'm told what to do, and I do what I'm told. I don't try to change things or add things. So like I'll use the big book as an example. It gives me some instructions on how to begin my day in prayer and meditation. So I read that. I've got from my religion, I've got a little devotional there that I read. And then I have literature outside of that. It's generally the For Today and the Daily Readers. And it's sometimes another story if I have time. At the end of the day, you know, it's the nightly review at the end of the chapter dealing with step 11. I read that and I do what it says. throughout the day, one of my sponsors, I talk to him every day. I'm required to. And we talk about, what am I doing in that day to help the still sick and suffering? What am I doing in that day for my program? And I require that of my sponsees. I have 5 of them right now. So we're talking every single day. Sometimes it's a short period of time. Sometimes if we're going through the big book or something's going on, it takes a little bit of time. And I have to do it. I just do it. I heard someone say earlier today that if you're asked to give service, you just say yes. And I try to do that as much as I can. And I got 4 kids. I got a job. I got all the things that everybody has. But if I don't make program the priority of my day, then my day generally is not a good one at the end of the day. And one of the things I always like in the morning is I'll say good morning, God, and good night, God, at the end of the day. And that really helps me just to begin in my day with God and then do all the things that I'm instructed to do by the people that I'm around. And that's what I do. Hope that helps.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Edna, you're muted.
There you go. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
I begin my day by praying before I get out of bed in the morning. I don't set a timer. It's just whatever time I feel the need to connect to my higher power. And I do the same thing at nighttime, is that I review my day in my head. I don't write anything down. And like everyone else, I haven't been out that much to have to make amends for. So right now, everything that I do, I keep it as simple as I can. I believe that the steps are kind of ingrained in me at this point, so I don't look at them like I'm actively working step one or step two or whatever. It's just that it has become my way of life, and I get up and do the same thing every day that pretty much that worked for me yesterday. And if I realize that everything in my life changed as a result of working the steps on a daily basis, like over and over again, and now I don't even think about them, I just do them.
Thank you, Edna.
That's all.
Carla, you're up.
Hi, my name's Carla, composer of Reader Food Addict. Hey, everybody. I lived in Atlanta for 20-some years. I just moved to Charleston, South Carolina, so it's good to see everybody, and I recognize some faces. And the 10th step, I was writing down the why it's important, from what I've read, is that it's important to continue to take personal inventory and really do steps 4 through 9, because we've worked so hard up to now to do all those. We don't want to go backwards. They talk about, that a lot of the character defects are there because we're blocked from the spirit, the sunlight of the spirit, which means for me, that there, my higher power can't help me unless, I get rid of some of the junk inside of me that's blocking the power that needs to be in there for, power greater than myself. So, that's why step 10 is important, because you want to get rid of that junk. You've already gotten rid of it. You're clean. But life is such that, you'll continue to get gunk in you unless you are always vigilant in trying to rid it. You'll always have some, but you don't want it to build up that, you start to get the obsession and the compulsion. The 11th step for me, I always recommend that people find their own prayers. I think that's very important. I recommend to my sponsees to write a prayer, you know, their own prayer. I say three prayers at night. I've been saying them for many, many, many years. The first one is, I pray for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. I pray for one more day of sanity with food and emotions, because I do suffer from depression. And I pray for God's love, strength, and guidance. Because for me, you know, love is your heart, strength is your body, and guidance is your mind. And with those three things, I feel like I can get through anything at the end of the day. So those are the three things. Those are my prayers, that I like to say. And as far as, you know, God's will for me, I don't really know what God's will for me is, but the one thing that I've heard loud and clear is that God's will for me is not to hurt myself anymore. You know, that's God's will for me. If I don't hear any other message, that's the one message I got. And that was clear by, the fact that I was 12-stepped into this program. I've been in the program since 1980, and I've been abstinent. I'm a sugar addict, and I've been abstinent from sugar since 1984. So I'm a grateful member of this program, saved my life. And step 12 talks about having had a spiritual awakening. For me, that means, you know, that I've worked all the steps, and as a result, the spiritual awakening comes as a result of working all the steps. And by working the steps, I have strength. Thank you. Appreciate y'all being there.
Thank you, Carla. Dottie, you're up next.
Hi, I'm Dottie from Byron, Georgia. That's right in the middle of the state of Georgia. And I've been in program since 99, multiple times abstinent with a lot of different sponsors, but I would say I was a chronic slipper. And even though I had over 25 years in the liquid program, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get continuous abstinence in OA. And it wasn't until during COVID that I got totally down on my knees and just said, okay, God, I'll do anything. Just send me a sponsor to fix me. And a lady called me, because I just went online and asked for a sponsor. You know, that was just like, okay, I'll take anything. And she called me, and it turned out that I didn't understand what 10, 11, and 12 was in the book, even though I'd been reading the book for over 25 years. And by doing the 10th step daily, really looking at myself and analyzing what's going on and turning it over to my higher power and not just pushing it down. Then in the 11th step, she said, Dottie, I don't think you understand what on awakening means. It doesn't mean 3 hours after you get up and walk out and are involved in everything else. It means when you become conscious from sleep. And so now when I wake up in the morning, when I'm laying there in bed, I acknowledge my higher power. And I say to my higher power, live in and through me to live this day the way you want me to live. And put your mind in my mind so that I will think properly about food instead of thinking food is my God and that my higher power is my God. And I start my day just with that. And sometimes days get crazy and I don't really have time to sit down to my morning meditation, but at least I've done that. On awakening, God, live in and through me to do what you want me to do today. And that starts my day off right. And working with other people in this program is an absolute joy. It has made my program so much stronger that as I work with others, it reinforces the program in myself. And so I just encourage everybody to reach out, share your program. This is a wonderful way of life. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank everyone for such a great meeting. Thank you for your service. Thank you to our speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope.